Hello everyone, welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 20th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone, glad to have you listening as always. Had a little rain to start the morning in Ford Dodge, didn't amount to a whole lot. It's moved on and I think we're going to see cooler temperatures, but fewer chances of rain as the week goes on. I know farmers are out in the fields trying to get their work done. So harvest is underway as we speak. We'll take a more detailed look at the forecast as we conclude our time together. Our first article from the Messenger is entitled Some Like It Hot. The annual Otho Chili Cook-Off was well attended on Saturday. There's a picture of Adam Hodson, age 12, from Clarion, as he serves up a helping of chili during the annual Otho Chili Cook-Off at the Otho City Park Saturday. His uncle, Flash Gustafson of Harcourt, is holding the bowl in this picture, and the two were cooking mates for the event. 2 years ago, Adam Hodson, age 12 of Clarion, was a judge for the annual Otho Chili Cook-Off. On Saturday, he traded his judge's scorecard for an apron and a chef's hat. Hodson was the head spicer for his chili team. He showed up bright and early at 6:45 a.m. to Otho City Park with his uncle, Flash Gustafson of Harcourt. It was Hodson's turn to be a cook. He asked if I would be his teammate. Gustafson said, "We have been practicing for the past 2 months making chili. Their particular brand of chili was meat heavy." Hodson said the chili contained bacon, Italian sausage, brisket, and hamburger. The chili contained no beans. "We don't have beans because Adam doesn't like to toot," Gustafson said. In terms of spicy, Gustafson said their chili wasn't too hot. "I don't like it real hot, but we go for a distinct flavor," Gustafson said. The cook-off is hosted by the Otho Betterment Committee. In addition to chili, there are kids' games and a softball tournament being played. "We have 7 chili cooks and 5 Bloody Mary teams," said Missy Ewing, a member of the Otho Betterment Committee. "They started cooking at 9 a.m. It's been a packed park with activities all day." In addition to the cook-off, there was the Bloody Mary competition. Ewing liked the variety of chili that was served up by the cooks. Her preference is anything not too spicy. "I like to add Fritos and shredded cheese to mine," she said. Dustin Andrews of Fort Dodge was busy serving up many cinnamon rolls to complement the bowls of chili. "It's the perfect sweet, salty spice," Andrew said. "I don't know what it is, but you have to have a cinnamon roll to go with them." Meanwhile, Rick and Sue Scott of Otho were enjoying their bowls of chili. The two are known around Otho for their service to the local fire department. Between the two, they've devoted 56 years to the Otho Fire Department. "Coming out and seeing folks is nice," Rick said. For his chili, he doesn't typically prefer beans in the mix. "Generally, I don't like beans in my chili," he said. "Well, I do," Sue responded. "What is chili without the beans?" The two did agree that the chili cooked up by the participants was flavorful. "So far, everything has been tasty," Rick said. Dwight Kaufman and the Reverend Philip Berger, both of Otho, were promoting chili for the Methodist Church. "It's the same chili we will be serving up for our fundraiser in January," Kaufman said. Travis Roach of Otho was convinced that his chili was truly the best. "Get your chili here," he shouted to the crowd. "Best chili over here, come and get it." Roach's chili was a white chicken chili. "I haven't got first place yet, so I'm trying something different," he said. Lead by example is the title of the next article. Sometimes if you want to get it done, you have to be the one to do it. Kathy Carlson has many reasons, why she volunteers her time serving on committees and boards that serve the town of Gallery. One reason is she is hoping to lead by example. She is hoping that not only others follow suit and step up, but it is something she wants to instill in her children. "They need to see it," she said. "I have taken them with me when I donated blood just to show them here's what you can do to help." Growing up, my dad donated blood, so that is why I do it. I hope it is a good example for my children," she said. Carlson lives just outside of Gowrie with her husband Brett and their three daughters, Riley, JC, and Taylor. Brett is a Gowrie area farmer who also owns and operates his own custom application business, and he is the town's newest fire chief. Carlson said choosing to be engaged is something she has done for most of her life. "I've always been involved," she said. "I think back to growing up on the farm and in 4-H and FFA and serving in those leadership positions, knowing that sometimes if you want to get it done, you have to be the one to do it." Carlson grew up near Rockwell City, but that has not kept her from embracing all that she can to help her new hometown thrive. "It's not my hometown, it's my husband's hometown," she said. "We have lived here our entire marriage. We raise our children here. We live, work, and play here. Just knowing my girls are growing up here, I want them to have the good memories of their hometown like I do mine." Carlson first became involved in her community when she joined the Chi Eta Sigma sorority. In that capacity, Carlson has served as a president and treasurer for the group that works to give back to the community with an emphasis on helping the children of Gowrie. "This has been made possible through such efforts as their Cow Pie Bingo, held each 4th of July in Gowrie, and their annual Handball Dinner." Carlson was elected in 2015 to the Southeast Valley School Board and is currently serving her second term. Starting soon after the grade-sharing agreement between Southeast Webster and Prairie Valley was made, Carlson said she is pleased with how the boards from both schools are working towards the same goals. "We have been able to bring the two boards together. We share a superintendent, and the elementaries are doing the same curriculum, so when the kids come together in fifth grade, they are all on track," she said. Carlson has been a loan officer at Security Savings Bank in Gowrie since November 2018. It was then she started attending the monthly meetings of the Gowrie Development Commission, GDC. She decided to become a member of the board when an opening became available. "I have really enjoyed being on the board for GDC, seeing a lot of how things go behind the scenes," she said. "The Greater Fort Dodge Growth Alliance is great with giving us updates of what is happening, sharing grant opportunities, and other things we can take advantage of." One of Carlson's prouder moments, or accomplishments rather, through her volunteering efforts was helping to keep a grocery store in Gowrie. "Back in January 2020, there was a community meeting. I, along with all those 100 plus people as a concerned citizen, because we live here, work here, and shop here," she said. At the end of the meeting, she was approached to consider being a part of the board, and she obliged. The town rallied together, and within 10 days had enough funds raised. The board continued on with forming an LLC and also put on some sweat equity into the project, helping to clean and get the store ready to open. "The town rallied. We did it. The town continues to rally. We recently won the Federal Homeland Bank grant, and that was based on the finalists and the number of votes they received. When it comes down to it, the town is there and they will do whatever," she said. Carlson is proud of the citizens of Gowrie for coming together, for not only helping to save the store, but other facets of fundraising with renovations done to the city's swimming pool, saving the golf course, and funds raised for a new fire station. "All that fundraising came from the people that live here and communities around here," she said. Let's take a look next at From Our Files. From Our Files takes us back to September 2006. There's a picture in today's Messenger. It shows Logan Lee, age 6, running through the hopscotch course at the gym's Carpet One booth during the 13th annual Hy-Vee Community Kids Fest. Logan's brother, Brandon, age 8, keeps an eye on his progress. And that is from our files going back to 2006 in September. Let's go ahead and take a look next at the News of Record, and we will find that next. Magistrate Court on Friday had one visitor. Fifth degree theft, Marianne McBride, 70, of Fort Dodge, 60 degrees, 3 days in jail suspended, 1 year informal probation. Fort Dodge police logs from Thursday include two domestic calls Suspicious person, 1900 block North 15th Street. Unknown problem, 900 block Central Avenue. 200 block of Avenue M West, an assault. Theft, 1100 block North 32nd Street. Car accident, 600 block 12th Avenue North. Drug violation, 800 block North 32nd Street. Runaway, 1200 block 4th Avenue South. Suspicious person, 2000 block 3rd Avenue South. Unknown problem, 800 block South 14th Street. A theft was reported. A suspicious person, 600 block of 2nd Street Northwest, and also in the 1600 block of 12th Avenue Southwest. Harassment, 200 block of North 16th Street. Runaway, 300 block Avenue M West, and in the 1300 block of Central Avenue. Juvenile problems, 1500 block 27th Avenue North. Suspicious person, 1st Avenue South and South 20th Street. Trespassing, 800 block 4th Avenue North. Juvenile problems, 10 block Johnson Place. Unknown problem, 200 block 5th Avenue North. Suspicious vehicle, 200 block North 1st Street. Civil problem, 1200 block 2nd Avenue North. And a fight in the 2900 block of 18th Avenue North. That is the police record listed from September 18th. On September 17th, Fort Dodge police logs from Wednesday report two domestic calls, a suspicious person, 2200 block of 2nd Avenue North. Suspicious person, 3100 block North 15th Street. Noise disturbance, 1600 block 12th Avenue Southwest. Suspicious person, 100 block South 12th Street. Trespassing, 1300 block 2nd Avenue North. A car accident, 800 block of Kenyon Road. Unknown problem, 500 block South 32nd Street. Juvenile problems, 800 block North 32nd Street. A loud music was reported, 100 block North 14th Street. Runaway, 300 block 1st Avenue South. Harassment, 1400 block of 9th Avenue South. Car accident, North 11th Street, 7th Avenue North. Theft in the 1400 block of 5th Avenue North. A car accident, 5th Avenue South and South 20th Street. A hit and run in the 900 block of South 22nd Street. Trespassing, 200 block Avenue M West. Car accident, 800 block Kenyon Road. Trespassing, 500 block 4th Avenue North. Shots fired, 100 block North 10th Street. A fraud was reported. Theft, 3300 block 5th Avenue South. Suspicious person, 1900 block 1st Avenue South. Drug violation, 200 block Avenue M West. Harassment, 1200 block 2nd Avenue North. A fight, 400 block North 13th Street. Burglary in progress, 200 block Avenue M West. Criminal mischief, 900 block 3rd Avenue North. Magistrate court on Thursday, one taker. Voluntary absence from custody, Stephen Jansen, 36 of Lorenz. A preliminary hearing set for September 24th. News of record continues from September 16th. Magistrate on Wednesday, violation or probation, Travis Davis, 39 of Fort Dodge, revocation hearing for October 11th. Driving while barred at Justice Olmstead Martin, 25, Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing waived, transferred to district court. Driving under suspension, Carlos Ramirez, 49 of Fort Dodge, fined $433.75. Ditto for Tyler Lindner, 31 of Manson. Fifth degree criminal mischief, Savannah Ramos, 20 of Fort Dodge, 3 days in jail, suspended, 1 year informal probation, fined $60. In no insurance in an accident, motorcycle moped license violation, and failure to maintain control. Tyler Lindner, 31 of Manson. Fined $215.25 on failure to maintain control, $112.50 under moped motorcycle license violation, and $796.75 with not having insurance. Police logs on Tuesday, four domestic calls. Suspicious vehicle, 700 block Exposition Drive, a pursuit, 290th Street and Sampson Avenue. Suspicious person, 7th Avenue North and North 15th Street. Water problems, 2nd Street Northwest and Hawkeye Avenue. A strange odor, 1500 block 3rd Avenue Northwest. Fraud, 700 block 1st Avenue South. Juvenile problems, 900 block South 18th Street. Car accident, 4th Avenue South and South 8th Street. theft 600 block Central Avenue, trespassing 3 counts 100 block of Avenue M West, 300 block of South of 4th Street Northwest, and the 1000 block of 2nd Avenue South. Car accident 800 block North 25th Street, 10th Avenue North, and North 15th Street. Criminal mischief 600 block Central Avenue. Suspicious person 2nd Avenue North and North 15th Street. Strange odor 100 block Avenue M West. Noise disturbance 10 block North 10th Street. Unknown problem 1400 block South 23rd Street. Suspicious person South 20th Street. Harassment 100 block Avenue M West. Suspicious person 300 block South 19th Street. Shoplifter 3000 block 1st Avenue South. Fireworks 600 block North 15th Street. And a suspicious vehicle reported near 1st Avenue South and South 3rd Street. And that is our police reports and magistrate courts from the latter part of last week. I think that gets us all caught up. We're going to flip over to the Messenger editorial page. Today's editorial is entitled Farm Safety Yields Real Results. National Farm Safety and Health Week raises awareness of farm hazards. Farms can be seen as quiet, peaceful places where the crops grow and animals grow, graze in pastures. Farms can indeed be such tranquil spots, but as all Iowans know, farming is an industry, and like all industries, there are certain hazards associated with it. Tractors can be in crashes on rural roads, machines can snag arms and legs, grain bins can become death traps. Most of those nightmare scenarios can be avoided by using common sense and basic safety precautions. National Farm Safety and Health Week, which began Sunday and continues through Saturday, is a time dedicated to raising awareness of the various ways farmers can protect themselves and their families from the occupational hazards associated with growing America's food. This year's theme is Farm Safety Yields Real Results. The topics being emphasized during this week include tractor safety, overall farm health, safety and health for youth and agriculture, agriculture, fertilizer and chemical safety, safety and health for women in agriculture. National Education Center for Agricultural Safety, based in Peosta, has posted lots of safety information on its website, www.necasag.org. National Farm Safety and Health Week was launched in 1944 by the National Safety Council. While farming has some inherent risks, there's no reason why living and working on a farm should be an experience that causes people to risk life and limb. We urge all farmers to take advantage of all the safety and health information that is available to them. Farming is a profession that's vital to our country, and if the right precautions are followed, it can be a very safe profession as well. And that is today's Messenger editorial. We're going to go back to September 18th. Randy Feenstra helps Iowa thrive. He's championing biofuels in Washington, D.C. And that is from the Messenger editorial page from this past Saturday. The ethanol and biodiesel industries are significant contributors to Iowa's economy. Our state is a leader nationally in the production of these fuels. Iowa manufacturers provide nearly 4 billion gallons of ethanol each year and about 351 million gallons of biodiesel. The positive significance of the ethanol and biodiesel production for the Hawkeye State's farmers is huge. It is estimated that approaching 40% of the 13.2 million acres of Iowa farmland devoted to growing corn supports ethanol production. Soybean growers also sell heavily to biodiesel manufacturers. These biofuels industries add roughly $4 billion to our state's economy or economic activity annually. That's about a 2% contribution. They also help keep Iowa's farmers prosperous. U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra, who represents Iowa's 4th Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives, is a strong champion of biofuels. He is working hard to make sure that the importance of biofuels to our nation's future is understood in Washington and appropriately supported by lawmakers there and assisted by federal bureaucrats. Feenstra is doing much more than telling the biofuel story. He is making positive things happen. For example, Feenstra recently secured support for biofuels research in a $3.5 trillion spending bill now being considered by Congress. Two amendments he advocated gained committee approval. One adds biofuels to the list of bioenergy technologies the United States Department of Energy will develop and demonstrate. That allows the department to spend some of its budget on advanced biofuel projects. The second amendment directs NASA to include biofuels in its research into sustainable aviation fuels. These research initiatives could well result in a broadening of the biofuels marketplace. Additionally, Feenstra has just introduced legislation that could have huge ramifications in the not-too-distant future, the Biofuel Cell Research Act, H.R. 5090. According to the congressman, quote, this bill directs the Secretary of the Department of Energy to establish a research, development, and demonstration program for a commercially viable fuel cell system that uses biofuels as the main fuel source, end quote. As the potential for biofuel cell systems grows, this research could prove extremely beneficial to Iowa's biofuels manufacturers as well as the state's farmers. Feenstra is thinking creatively about Iowa's agricultural future. That's an exciting and welcome development. The messenger commends Feenstra for these efforts and for his many energetic efforts on behalf of not only biofuels but also for the agricultural community in general. He is proving to be a highly successful congressman who is able to work effectively with his colleagues in both parties to achieve results. Feenstra's achievements in Washington, D.C. deserve support and applause. And that is the Messenger editorial from Saturday. There was a Messenger editorial in Friday's paper entitled Support Go Big, Go Dodgers Fundraiser. And that event was held this past Saturday night, I believe. Our public schools are among the most important institutions in our community. Quite simply, the educational work they undertake shapes the children who will be the future of our city, state, and nation. Funding the school system is an expensive undertaking. Unfortunately, the monies available from local, state, and national governmental sources are often insufficient to pay for all those things that are needed to achieve the educational goals we have for our kids. That's why the fundraising undertaken by the Fort Dodge Community Schools Foundation provides an important enhancement to public education in our town. It plays an important role in helping to fund educational materials within the school system, according to Nick Mosier, the foundation's director. In the past, the foundation has paid for programmable robots, math and literacy materials, metal shop tools, and musical instruments. The foundation's annual Go Big, Go Dodgers fundraiser was held Saturday at Fort Frenzy. This past Saturday at Fort Frenzy. This is a huge event for us, mainly because we're putting 100% of the money we raise back into the district and investing in our kids and teachers, Mosier told The Messenger. It's really a celebration of our schools and our community. The annual event has raised more than $400,000 for the schools since 2011. The Messenger enthusiastically supports the foundation's important work. We urge our readers to help it achieve its goals by attending the event and events in the future, I added that, and assisting the foundation throughout the year. Participating in Go Big, Go Dodgers will help make our excellent school system even better. Besides, Go Big, Go Dodgers promises to be a really fun night. And that is the Messenger editorial from this past Saturday. There is also a letter to the editor entitled, Let's Move Forward Together, Not Backward. And this is submitted by John Jacobs of Manson. To the editor, as a Christian veteran and always an independent voter, things have to change. Here we are not long after the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and so many family members are still waiting for answers and closure. In my 80 years, Dad had always said, you are a member of a Gold Star family. The government has got their fingers into many things. As my dad's only brother and younger went from graduation to enlist, it saved my dad from being drafted as his numbers right at the top when I was 2 years old. As years went by, I got married, got drafted at 26. I served 2 years, one of those going to Vietnam on my 27th birthday. In 2011, same year after 9/11, I lost my nephew from Northern Iowa in Afghanistan on a nationwide story. He was a Navy SEAL from SEAL Team 6. A Huey helicopter was shot down on a mission to save Army Special Forces who were pinned down. Over 30 personnel, including 21 other Navy SEAL comrades, went down. This put me into the Gold Star family for the second time. I feel I should never have been drafted, lost a nephew, and went through the news of 9/11 as most of us did. Don't feel that I am bitter, as I am mighty proud to have served, and thank God daily I got back safe, but so many did not get back. Now, in 2021, this current administration has stepped up, which everyone had the same opportunities to do for the past 30 years. Each year has turned into more hate, arguments, military conflicts, and less going over party lines and working together. The worldwide COVID has not helped, but the slogan has been, "We are all in this together. Let's follow the rules. Get the free vaccinations and back our president." Don't know when that man is getting any sleep, as it appears he is working 7 days a week, 7 day weeks and holidays. He had started getting vaccines ordered before he took office, visiting medical people, military, fires, hurricanes, getting our women and men out of Afghanistan, plus everything else. Things had been getting worse, and our former president, who is a few years younger than I, but grew up through the same years as I, when he decided to run, he researched which would be best for him to win. He finally decided on the party he did. Our police and security people's lives had been getting worse. Our cart systems are 2 years behind, as it seems like they, for years, have let them pass with time and will not turn out as bad. If we could do these court cases while it's fresh in people's minds instead of sweeping it under the rug for a couple of years. Medical people are burned out, school budgets have had to cut way back and dropping many classes. Churches had to close and are trying hard to get their members back. I will never change my voting, as I always vote for the best man or woman or man. So the next election may eliminate some who are lifelong to their party, probably will not get my vote unless they decide to work together. And again, that is a letter to the editor from John Jacobs of Manson. What Seniors Are Saying is the title of a feature article where the Messenger interviews a high-performing senior from Fort Dodge Senior High. Unfortunately, as is usual, they don't name this student. They just put a picture in the version that I see. What programs and activities do you participate? I played basketball all 4 years at Fort Dodge Senior High. What academic accomplishment are you most proud of? I'm proud to say I've never failed a class and had to repeat the process. Get it done the first time. If you simply show up and do the daily work, you will pass. What's your best piece of advice for younger students? My advice for underclassmen is to simply be brave, try new things, be willing to meet new people, stay involved in extracurricular activities. You meet new people and they even become a little family. High school goes by quickly, so when something new is out in front of you, take the opportunity to do great things. What is your go-to song or artist? My go-to song is Party in the USA because the girls and I would jam to it before every game. Payteen would always have all the old jams ready when we walked in the locker room. What is your favorite class or subject and why? I like my social psych class with Mr. Takasuka because everyone is involved. It's a class of nine, so we are all able to state our opinion and discuss together. What is your favorite movie? My favorite movie I like to watch yearly is Home Alone. It's always a good one to get you in the Christmas spirit. If you could have dinner with someone famous, who would it be and why? I would have dinner with Kobe Bryant because he was my favorite basketball player and I always loved to watch him play. I would hope to get some new advice from him and maybe he could teach me a few moves. What are you working hardest on right now? The hardest thing I'm working on right now is trying to gather myself for the real world. Getting ready to graduate and start a new chapter is crazy, but it's exciting. Who is your role model in life? My role model is my mom, Carrie. She has always been a good person to look up to in many ways. She is a hard worker and always completes the task. What is your favorite memory from your time in Fort Dodge schools? My favorite memory goes all the way back to Butler Elementary when we got Domino's Pizza every Friday, or the Fort Dodge Middle School in 8th grade when I made a buzzer beater and the crowd went crazy. A good memory at Fort Dodge Senior High would have to be freshman homecoming. It was the first one and the last one I've been to since, due to COVID. My most favorite, though, is just playing basketball with my friends and being around my teammates. And that is today's Messenger, What Seniors Are Saying column. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to our obituary page. Aaron Oslund. Aaron Michael Oslund, age 32, the son of Mike and Carrie Limcool Oslund, brother of Nathan Oslund and Alex Oslund, was born December 16, 1988, and passed away September 16, 2021. He was delivered in critical condition by Dr. Brian Welch at Trinity Regional Hospital in Fort Dodge and was life-flighted to Blank Children's Hospital Neonatal Intensive Care Unit and remained at Plank for 6 weeks until he was stabilized and able to return home with his family. Aaron suffered a brain injury from birth, affecting every bodily function from visual, vocal, and hearing impairment to cerebral palsy and daily seizures, yet was very loving and able to teach many important lessons in life to those around him. He was a great judge of character based on how people treated him. He would readily provide his infamous hugs to those who treated him well. His favorite hobby was swimming, the only way he was able to move about freely on his own. Attending Camp Courageous, listening to music, playing his keyboard, having books read to him, spending time with his family and teasing family and friends. He is survived by his grandfather Kenneth Limcool, mother Carrie Limcool Oslund, brother Nathan Oslund, twin nieces Addison and Adeline, and several aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. Aaron was preceded in death by grandmothers Donna Limcool and Mary Bell Oslund, grandfather Robert Oslund, father Mike Oslund, aunt Kathy Tegmeyer, and brother Alex. The family would like to extend their deep appreciation to his care providers, education, and medical professionals who provided care and support for Aaron throughout his life. Visitation is Tuesday, September 21st, from 1 to 2 p.m. at Lansing Funeral Service in Iowa City. Services are at 2 p.m. at Lansing Funeral Service with a reception to follow in the Kirkwood Room. A private burial will be Wednesday, September 22nd at Memory Gardens. Family kindly requests the wearing of masks to the events. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to Mayor's Youth Empowerment Program, Systems Unlimited, or Camp Courageous of Iowa at Monticello. Bernice Hovey. Bernice Betty Hovey, 94, of Fort Dodge, died Saturday, September 18th at her home. A service honoring Bernice's life will be held 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 21st at St. Olaf Lutheran Church. Interment will follow at North Lawn Cemetery. Visitation is 1 hour prior to the service at the church. The Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services are in charge of arrangements. Bernice is survived by her daughter Mary Michael, her daughter-in-law Chris Hovey, grandchildren Charles, Andrew, Ashley, Matthew, Sarah, great-grandchildren Taya, Trevor, Emma, Beau, Arrow, and brother-in-law Roland McMillie. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Sherman, sons Bruce and Roger, son-in-law David Michael, granddaughter Jessica Michael, brother Donald Sampson, and sisters Doris McMillie and Dolores Kelvgard. Bernice, the daughter of Clayton and Alfina Rick Simpson, was born June 14, 1927 at Mondovi, Wisconsin. She grew up and graduated from Gilmanton High School. She was united in marriage to Sherman Hovey on August 17, 1947. They made Badger their home for many years. She was very active in the Badger Lutheran Church, serving as Sunday school teacher, league advisor, and with women's groups. She worked in the Badger School cafeteria for years. After the death of her husband, she moved to Fort Dodge, where she worked at the Fort Dodge Animal Health for 19 years in the office. and was also a switchboard operator at Clement Auto and Truck. She was a current member of St. Olaf Lutheran Church. She enjoyed spending time with family and friends and doing craft work. From Missouri, Benjamin Albee. Funeral services for Benjamin E. Albee will be 10 a.m. Thursday at First Reformed Church in Missouri. Visitation 5 to 7 Wednesday at Ewing Funeral Home in Belmont, and then 1 hour prior to the service on Thursday. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Humboldt, Mike Knowles. Funeral services for Mike Knowles will be 10:30 Friday at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Visitation is 4 to 7 Thursday at the church with the 7 o'clock prayer service. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Also from Humboldt, Rick Kofer. Services for Rick Kofer, 66, who died Friday, September 17th, at Friendship Haven will be held from 4 to 7, and that was on Sunday. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Monica Pringle. Funeral services for Monica Pringle will be 1 p.m. Friday at Lighthouse Ministries. Visitation 1 hour prior to the church service. Memorials may be directed to the family. Bruce's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that catches us up on today's obituary page. A few reminders. Webster County Conservation is holding a fireside chat from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Camp Winoki. A hike will start the evening in search of leaves to make a clay bowl. A legacy learning artist will bring everything needed for a creative hands-on evening. This session has a $30 fee to be paid at the beginning of the class, which covers instructor, materials, firing, and delivery. The Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club is set to meet at 1 o'clock on Tuesday at the Lion's Den, 731 Exposition Drive. The program will be garden collectibles. Visitors are welcome to attend. Stay Independent, a Healthy Aging Series, is being held. Iowa State Extension and Outreach is offering its Stay Independent, a Healthy Aging Series virtually from 6:30 to 7:30 on Wednesdays beginning October 6th through November 10th. Through the Stay Independent classes, you will learn the health benefits of eating well and moving more, obtain great resources for healthy aging, and exchange ideas with peers to help you meet your health goals. This 6-week nutrition and wellness series provides information and tips for older adults ages 60 and up to help remain healthy and independent. Topics include cooking for one or two, exercise your independence, power up with protein, feast on fruits and vegetables, brain health, and 3 meals a day. You may register by calling the Webster County Extension Office at 576-2119 for more information. The Sac County Quilt Affair is 9 o'clock to 4 p.m. September 25th and 26th at the Sac County Fairgrounds. There will be quilt vendors, free demonstrations, food services available, bits and pieces for sale, a special drawing, and self-guided barn quilt tours. Doris Dutmeyer, an Iowa quilt artist, will give a free lecture each day. One day admission is $8. 2 days admission is $12. For more information, call Linda Slight at 712-668-4829. Lee Cole Williams at 712-880-7216. Or visit barnquilts.com or saccountyiowa.com for more information. A reminder, the Central Iowa RSVP, or Retired and Senior Volunteer Program, has a fun project in which people over the age of 55 write to fifth graders to help them learn the art of letter writing. This year, Southeast Valley Middle School in Burnside has requested an expansion of the Pen Pal program to include all three of their fifth grade classes, so 50 more Pen Pals are needed. St. Edmund Elementary in Fort Dodge is participating for the first time in the Pen Pal program and has 42 students in the fifth grade. That means many new Pen Pals are needed. If you are at least age 55 and would be willing to write one letter a month to a fifth grade student, please contact Becky Coppin, RSVP Volunteer Coordinator, at 515-832-2525. Looking at the Daily Freeman Journal, Leslie Thomas has joined the First State Bank staff in Webster City as an operations specialist. She is a 2020 graduate of Webster City High School and is currently attending Iowa Central Community College for her AA degree. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her family and friends. First State Bank is a locally owned financial institution organized in 1935 in Webster City with additional office locations in Humboldt, Eagle Grove, Fort Dodge, Clarion, Stanhope, and Jewell. The Briggs Woods Golf Course and the Hamilton County Conservation Board applied for and received funding from Hamilton County Tourism Hotel Motel Tax in 2021 for the upgrading of the clubhouse. The facility, constructed in 1991, was refurbished with a fresh coat of exterior staining to the building. Improvements inside the clubhouse include new carpeting on the upper level, interior paint, and new LED lighting. Outside, crews replaced the concrete on the patio, installed a pergola, and a grill. The upgrades have been completed, and officials with the clubhouse said the public is welcome to stop in to view the improvements. About 54% of Hamilton County residents are fully vaccinated for COVID-19. According to public health officials, that number continues to slowly tick upwards, even as positive rates or cases rather continue to rise. We're still seeing a lot of community spread throughout the county from September 1st through the 14th. We've had 88 known positive cases, Shelby Kruna, Hamilton County Public Health Administrator, said. Many of those cases are school-aged children. According to the data from coronavirus.iowa.gov, 31% of the positive tests over the past 7 days have been in those 17 and younger, while 20% have been from the 40 to 49 age group. 54% of the positive tests over the past 7 days in Hamilton County are female, while 44% are male, which adds up to 98%. Don't ask me. The current positivity rate for Hamilton County is at 12%, according to the website. We continue to reach out to families to try to educate them on best practices, staying home when they are ill, washing their hands, wearing masks, but we are having less and less success in connecting with people who have tested positive, she said. Kruna said the FDA will be meeting this week, rather, to discuss the use of booster shots, which they have, and decided that they're not going to promote booster shots. I'm hearing that Pfizer is really looking at what happened in Israel and seeing that the third dose has been very effective. They're using that as their research. Kruna said her department is offering a third dose to those who are immunocompromised but are not authorized to give booster doses to the general public pending FDA approval. For the immunocompromised, we'd like them to have a conversation with their doctor first. Then they can call and make an appointment with us after they have visited with their physician about whether the patient needs that third dose. On Monday, a federal judge ordered the state of Iowa to immediately halt an enforcement of a law that prevents school boards from ordering masks to be worn to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. School districts across the state are now considering whether students and staff will return to mandatory masking. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention continue to encourage masking for people, including children older than age 2, in indoor public places if they are not fully vaccinated or are fully vaccinated but in an area with substantial or high transmission, or those fully vaccinated with weakened immune systems. Masking in crowded outdoor settings or with activities in close contact with others who are not fully vaccinated is also recommended by the CDC. Kruna says she believes CDC guidance on masks is correct. I find myself siding with CDC on the mask guidance. Anyone who is unvaccinated, whether children or adults, should be wearing masks, she said. Anyone who cannot or has not received the vaccine should be wearing a mask. There are some shiny new epoxy floors that were installed at the West Twin Park shelter Wednesday afternoon with the labor and materials donated by a local firm. A crew from DCD Concrete Coatings worked at the shelter to put down the flooring in the two restrooms in the kitchen area of the shelter. Crew member Jordan Tanner said the concrete floor was prepped with a large diamond grinder to help the epoxy materials adhere to the floor. The whole process took just a few hours, he said. We really appreciate the work they're doing, said Larry Flaws, director of Recreation and Public Grounds. It really looks great. Flaws said the work on the shelter is now nearly finished. Once the new floors are dried and cured, Habhab Construction will come in to finish the plumbing work for the structure. They'll finish up the sinks and the plumbing, and then we'll have to have somebody stain and seal the exterior. He said city employees installed the electrical work in the building. The assembling of the shelter was managed through volunteer efforts led by Mayor John Hawkins, Flaws said. He's done a lot of the work himself, but he's also gotten together a lot of people in the community to help with this. The volunteers worked a lot of weekends. The structure went up pretty quickly, but then we have all these finishing details. And though the city park facilities closed in October, Flaws said he believed the shelter would see some usage before then. I think we see it used, he said. It's been a long project, but it turned out pretty nice. We're excited to use it. We're already having calls from people wanting to reserve it for graduations next spring, he added. We'll take a look next at the Messenger Sports. Julia Eastman is just a freshman, but the Southeast Valley student is making steady progress, far beyond her years for the Fort Dodge girls swim team. Eastman was a double winner for the Dodgers at the annual Gary Winkler Invitational on Saturday, capturing both the 100 butterfly and 100 backstroke titles in the Fort Dodge pool. The homestanding Dodgers took third, finishing behind Sioux City Metro and West Des Moines Dowling's varsity reserve squad. Julia had a great day, said head coach Ashley Beaumont. It was awesome to see her step up and win two events. More importantly, she's getting the experience she needs at the varsity level to continue to make progress and push herself. There's always a balance between pushing yourself through the regular season and tapering to get ready for districts and state, but Julia is making great progress, and she'll be able to push herself even more when we go to Ames for a duel on Tuesday. They'll all get to measure up and see where they stand against the third-ranked Little Cyclones. Reagan Wooldridge, a sophomore at Manson Northwest Webster, earned a silver in the 100 breaststroke and bronze in the 200 individual medley. The Dodgers 200 medley relay quartet of junior Eileen Fierk, freshman Addison Daniel, Eastman, and Wooldridge were also runner-up. The Dodgers take on Ames this Tuesday at 5:30. The Iowa Central Tritons throttled the Panthers on Saturday, the Gordon Fine Arts and Sports Academy, by a score of 84-6. The focus now turns entirely on Iowa Western for the 8th-ranked Iowa Central football team. Iowa Central now prepares for a showdown with the Rivers back here next Sunday at noon. We came into this game looking to stay sharp and get through it healthy, said Iowa Central head coach Jesse Montado. We knew it would be like this, but I was proud of our guys for focusing in and taking care of business. We got a lot of kids in, and we saw some exciting things from younger guys who haven't had a chance to play. Now, though, we know it gets tougher, and we have to be ready to match Iowa Western when they come here. The Tritons scored on their first 11 drives of the opening 30 minutes, including 6 first-quarter touchdowns. Byron Jarrett played just those possessions, accounting for 4 passing scores and a rushing one. He was 10 for 13 passing, 143 yards with 55 yards rushing on 3 carries. Byron came in and looked ready to go, said Montado. He was efficient and poised in the pocket, showing how much he has progressed already this season. He has really taken on a strong leadership role for the program. Zach Barker came on in the second quarter and led 5 more scoring drives. He was 3 of 7 for 76 yards, with a touchdown to Carson Hilsenbeck, while also showing off his running skills with 81 yards on 6 carries, including 2 scores. On defense, Kenny Gemmons had 2 sacks. Demetrius Walker and Dalton DeWitt each had 1, and the Tritons forced 5 turnovers. Deion Coleman, Dominic McMillian, Deontay Bryant recovered fumbles, with Bryant Barrier and LeJuan Miller picking off passes. The defense just continues to make plays. Now, though, we have to be ready for the toughest test we faced to date. Before the season started, Iowa Western was the game we had marked to find out what kind of team we have. The number 1 Tritons volleyball team had no trouble improving to 20-0 on Saturday, scoring 2 more victories on the volleyball court. The Tritons swept past Dakota County Technical and Jamestown JV at the North Dakota State College of Science Tournament. This is the fourth or fifth year we've come up to this tournament, and it's always a good tournament for us to see some different teams and get some good competition, said head coach Sarah Horn. Jamestown JV was our last opponent, and their varsity team is number 2 in NAIA, and is always a really tough team to play. We really did a great job this whole weekend, but particularly in the last match of doing our jobs. Our bench was super great and brought some fun energy all weekend. Caitlin Steffes had 10 kills. Angel Baylark had 9. Haley Alherthy had 7, and Brooke Dobson 6 in the first match. Jory Hodgick added 5 kills and 13 digs, with Alicia Johnson picking up 31 assists and 3 aces. Our backcourt did a great job of putting Alicia in some good positions. She did a great job mixing up our offense and finding our hot hitters. And our front row did a great job of putting a lot of pressure on teams with our attacking and blocking, Horn said. Iowa Central returns home to face Iowa Lakes inside Hodges Fieldhouse Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Also, the Iowa Central rugby team had a match this past weekend up in St. Paul, Minnesota. The third-ranked Iowa Central rugby team bounced back nicely from their first loss on Saturday. Herb Evans had 2 tries, and 4 other Tritons recorded a try in a 40-8 victory over Minnesota. Evans was also 1-for-1 on conversion kicks, as was James Kuawini, Tavius Sikora Mathis, Xavier Ellis, and Griffin Studier all added a try each. I thought our lineouts were phenomenal, said Iowa Central head coach Brent Nelson. They were as good as I've ever seen. Tavius had really great timing and good throws. Iowa Central had a 14-0 lead before turning it on late with a flurry. I never want to take anything away from a team, but we have some guys hurt, some guys resting, and some guys on the bench that have kept us from putting together a full side yet, Nelson said. Once we get everybody healthy and everybody situated, this team is going to be really, really good, because they are already really good. I just can't wait to be firing on all cylinders. We line up against anybody and give them our best. Iowa Central's B-side will be in action Thursday night against Northern Illinois, and again on Saturday against Des Moines RFC. The A-side will play Nebraska on October 1st and Iowa on October 2nd with split squads. We'll flip over next to this day in history. It is September 20th, and on this date in 1973, Billie Jean King triumphed over Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes. In 1777, Redcoats killed sleeping Americans in the Paoli Massacre. In 1878, Upton Sinclair was born. In 1946 was the first Cannes Film Festival. 1565, the first European battle on American soil in colonial America. In 2012, the Amish are convicted in beard-cutting attacks. In 1519, Magellan set sail from Spain. In 2002, an avalanche thundered into a Russian village. In 1988, Greg Louganis wins the Olympic gold the day after suffering a head injury. In 1881, Chester Arthur becomes the third president to serve in 1 year. On this date, 1963, President Kennedy proposed a joint mission to the moon. Also on this date in 1806 was the returning Lewis and Clark as they reached the first white settlement on the Missouri River. That was in 1806. Let's go ahead and get the weather forecast called up. I started reading for this Monday afternoon, and we are under a severe thunderstorm watch. And it sounds like it's raining, and it's going on about 2:30 in the afternoon. And looking at the radar, there is some rain in the Fort Dodge area. And they click there, and it looks like there's some more rain coming. In the meantime, the forecast for the next 7 days. On Tuesday, we should have partly cloudy skies, high of 69, low of 42, under clear skies. Wednesday's gorgeous, 70, mostly clear, a low of 43. Thursday, even more gorgeous, sir. High of 74 under clear skies. Thursday night, mostly clear, high of 51. Partly cloudy Friday, high of 71, a low of 43. Saturday, partly cloudy, high of 72, low of 46. On Sunday, warming up to a high of 80 degrees. That's the forecast for the next 7 days or so. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 20th. A special shout out to my good friend Denise, who's having a birthday today. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thanks so much for joining me for this time together. Of course, this podcast and many other podcasts are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. And we appreciate your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Take good care of yourselves, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again real soon right here on IRIS.